Welcome to Miracle Nutrition with Hardy White. I'm Hardy White. Join me now, won't you? As we mishear things together, as we become confused and disoriented together. But we're together. That's what matters. I like to lie in bed and watch old television shows as a way of dealing with my mortality. I look at something like Hogan's Heroes and I think to myself, all right, I could die. There's not too much about this world that I'm attached to, really, after watching this Hogan's Heroes, which is reminding me about everything that's wrong in the world, all wrapped up into one program. It's very interesting how they do it, because you look at it and you think, okay, Nazis, prison camp, war, show business, sitcoms, comedy writing, and you think, yeah, all right, what's really good about life? It's not in there. And so it reminds you that there's balance, and for all the wonderful joy and reward of life, like, oh, a fruit, good fruit salad, not one where they throw a maraschino cherry in there or something, but real seasonal, fresh fruit. Even maybe fruit from your garden. Hopefully you've checked it and you know it's fruit and not like, oh, this is a, eat this fruit. And you go, that's very good. Oh, no, it's tongue fruit from which they make tongue oil, which is a furniture polish. And good Lord, you don't want to serve anybody furniture polish. Now, I was watching these old television shows, and they put quite a few of them on there, like your Beverly Hillbillies, which I just found out are from, they're supposed to be from the Ozarks and not the Appalachians. And I don't know, you're saying, well, that doesn't make a difference to me. Well, it does to me. And it's just a good, that's a good thing to find out. And it explains a lot. But also they're showing this Jackie Gleason Honeymooners, which is an amazing show because it went on to inspire so many. It was really the prototype for a lot of imitators after that. And The Flintstones is a direct, I don't know, parody, copy of it. I don't even know what it is. It's a cartoon based on The Honeymooners. Someone said, you know, they were sitting around and I don't know what kind of drugs they were on or something, or they hadn't slept in days, and they thought, what if the Honeymooners were in the caveman times? And then the whole room got quiet. And someone said, how would we do that? Miniatures? Or say, no, we could have it animated. And then you wouldn't need Jackie Gleason. Now, I'm watching the original show, and it's pretty amazing because it's basically sort of like a stage show. It's like theater. It has sort of one set, you know, and I don't know how many cameras, but it's not a lot. It's not a sophisticated thing, and it feels like it's done for an actual audience. So there's a theater element to it, and Jackie Gleason is doing a sort of broad, full-body comic acting that to me is very evocative of kabuki, especially in the face. He pulls these faces or he does these head movements, especially if he's indicating that he's very proud, or he's overly proud, or he's smug, or even if he's angry, or all of those things are played so broadly and in such a kabuki way, because his stance is always very fixed and firm. He's a comic actor who's aware of where he is in space. And I don't know whether that's alcohol. I don't know what does that. But I think, or experience, or just a little of both, right? You mix it together like a sort of cocktail. And I'm fascinated by it. Now, Art Carney, whose name is pronounced like the New Jersey town that's spelled differently, is very difficult for me to understand. And like that. That's all I hear. And a thing that I want to tell you about, and something that I am such a believer in, almost more than religion, is being confused. And that's putting yourself in a position where you're listening to or experiencing something and you don't know what it is. Because expectations wreck interpretation. You'll never be able to really see something if you're expecting something. You know, I'm going in the woods, I'm trying to see the specific type of bird, you're going to miss a lot. So what you have to go is, you know, I don't even know where I am. I don't know what a bird is. So that way you notice everything. I do know what a bird is. Well, do I though? I've seen some. I go, maybe I don't know what a bird is. That one's so strange looking. It looks like a dinosaur. And did the Beverly Hillbillies have dinosaurs? I don't know who was put in another time. All sitcoms were moved to other eras as a variation. So what if, you know, it was Hogan's Heroes, but it was World War II? Oh, they already did that one. You didn't even notice they did that one. Because it just added another layer. I can't tell that this is a double fudge cake. Well, it is. It's double fudge. There is, in those sort of old entertainments, a sort of seeming naivete that is really cynicism. And so when I watch them, I think, boy, there are lots of people that think people are stupid. And are they? And I'm not sure they really are. I mean, they're surviving and making a living. I don't know that people are as stupid as people who sell things to people think they are, or advertisers. You know, people are stupid, look what they're buying. Well, they're buying something, who knows why. Maybe it's all that there is. That's not stupid. That's just being a, they're so stupid. Look, every time I hit them in the head, they grab for an ice bag. Yeah, I don't know that makes them stupid. But my goodness. I'm trying to compliment you, because that's what you do when you speak to an audience or something. So you are probably the brightest group of people I've ever seen. And that's why I know that you will enjoy these timeshares. I feel that's a little bit like my shows are like that. I'm wanting you to, they're a little like timeshares, aren't they? I bring you in, I give you a pitch, I say, this is why you should listen to me. And then sometimes I'll give you donuts, which is like a little skit or a song or something. And you go, this is pretty good. This might be a really good opportunity. But I have learned from Jackie Gleason and others that these opportunities sometimes are a bigger sacrifice than they are a benefit. Let me give you an instance. Ralph Cramdon, which is the character that Jackie Gleason plays, who's Ralph Cramdon is a bus driver. And Ed Norton is a sewer worker. Now try to say that once or a couple times fast and then stop and then say it again. Sir worker. Can't do it. So Ralph Cramdon is a bus driver. He's often wearing his uniform, which looks to me to be like a size 55 regular. And he's often agitated, or he is in a fit of manic enthusiasm about some kind of opportunity or another get-rich-quick scheme or something like this. So he'll come to Ed Norton, and he'll say, Ed Norton, who doesn't want to get rich like that or something? And Ed Norton will say, and what he's saying, I think, is I'm still recovering from the last time you helped me get rich. Because what Cramdon wants is an investment into his idea that he hasn't really even thought through. He feels these grandiose feelings. He knows he's great. He knows he shouldn't be living in this rundown apartment in Brooklyn. Another thing, if you watch the show, that you'll notice is the Nortons have it much better than the Cramdons. So you go up to the Nortons' apartment, and they have wallpaper. They have a couch. They have a television. They have all the anemones. And what is an anemone? That is a way of remembering something, an amenity device. No, that's all they have, all the accoutrements, which is something that RV man can't say. And the, but the Cramdons do not. The Cramdons live in abject poverty. And I think it's because Rolf Cramdon is, you know, is grandiose and self-deluded and selfish and violent. And he threatens his wife. And it's just, it's really kind of hard to watch. And the show is kind of dated because of that. But they love him anyway. And I don't feel like they're enabling or somebody should stand up to him or kill him. I'm not sure. The show is baffling to me. And I don't know what I'm watching. And it's way out of context. And in the Flintstones, it ain't. But maybe it is. I realized after I'd seen some art and listen to some music that I didn't understand that was baffling to me, that I should go back and examine all the things that I think I do understand, all the music I think I know, all the movies I think I know the plot to or what they're really about, all the paintings that I think, oh, I know what that is. That's just that's a tiny arm. You go, no, it isn't. So you want to rethink or re-see things, and when you do, you realize just how baffling the world is. Just how little you do know. And that can be frightening. Say, oh, Hardy, I realize I know even less than I thought. My world feels upended. And to have you say, well, you never knew where you were to begin with, is not helpful. You were always lost. But I didn't feel lost. And it's the feeling of feeling lost that's the problem. Well, what about the feeling of not feeling lost when you are lost? Is that foolish? It can be. Or you can be one of those people that is sits in the absolute confusing chaos and says, I'm just going to keep reading this Faulkner novel and just see what happens. And then it'll wash over you, maybe. And maybe the meaning of something will come over you, and some as you immerse yourself in the gestalt of its the nuances. What? Well, you know, if you learn something, you learn a space, it reveals itself to you, and it unveils itself, sort of. And I think that that's what happens when you let something you don't understand or even like. That's why I say, stick it out. Keep listening to the show. I don't know. I can't take another. You can do it. I can't take another minute. I know you're reaching for that dial and your fingers are on it and you're going, but it's not a dial though, buddy. I don't know what it is, man. I mean, you know, that's the thing. I think there's a little disconnect between us. So I don't know what your radio looks like or whether it is a radio or not or whether you're listening on the phone or where you are, subway, car, rocket ship. We had one listener. I said, where are you? They were typing on the site. I'm up on a space shuttle. I had no idea. And it was Captain Kubrick from Space Shuttle 9 had been up there and said, you know, we had some people listening in a dirigible. Because I had a time machine, we had some people on the Hindenburg. We also had listeners on the Hildenburg, which you don't hear about a lot because nothing ever happened to it. And I think that's still around somewhere in an old hangar, the Hildenburg. It was a pleasure to travel on. And it didn't explode because it wasn't helium or hydrogen. It was some other kind of gas. And it smelled awful, but it never exploded or anything, and everybody was fine, and we went about our business. And if you could stand the odor, there was a piano up there, and the view, it was just lovely. You'd have cocktails, and you say, I'm gagging on this putrid, wretched, fetid, acrid, breath-stealing stench. But look at our progress in the air. We're probably going 5-6 miles an hour. What a wonderful way to travel. Back then, And they didn't have to, here's the funny thing, they didn't have to make it look like a poo or a phallus or whatever it is. A hot air balloon can be any shape. But they just went ahead and made it look like that. I thought, and this predates like Star Trek or anything, big cube. I think that'd look cute. Big cube and maybe the, you know, I don't even sure it has to be symmetrical or anything. It could be a dragon. Wouldn't that be fun? Or you probably get stuck with something. You have some of those parade floats that go, let's make a parade float from one of the children's favorite cartoon characters and say, let's do Yellow Kid. So then you spend all this money building a huge Yellow Kid or something like that, and then you're stuck with it. Let's do Little Nemo. And then when you move on, you finally get to Bart Simpson. There's no money left, and you have to make it out of old mustard packets or something. Sewn together, though. And then what is the gas? That's the thing. I think they use helium. And if you've ever been gone to a gas inhaling, have you ever been to one? Well, it's like a bar. You go and you get, say, I'd like the gas flight. And they give you this flight of gases. And I think there's helium and there's nitrous oxide. And then there's mystery. It's called blue velvet. It's mystery gas. You're never really sure what it is. And but then you try them all out. And your voice goes up, your voice goes down. It's fun. A lot of people love it.
That one's good.
I like that one. And then you'll have to have it. Then you know next time you go into order, say, now I think I'm going to do all nitrous this time. I believe that I was reading about these fellas in like the 1790s and everything in the era of all this thinking going on in England and inventing and things like that. It was when I was researching the Wedgwoods that famous scientist, and his name will come to me, but they were doing all sorts of experiments. One of them is they filled a tent with nitrous oxide and got in it. And I always thought, wow, I know that's been done probably a dozen times at Boy Scout camps all over the country. But to know the origin of it, again, I think the origin of scouting was in England, but they go into this big nitrous gas tent. And I guess they laugh, pass out, vacate their bowels. I don't know what they did back then. So after they're done, they go, oh, that was enlightening. Let's have a sherry. And then they do. And their names go down in the, I want to say annals. I want to say annals, but I think it's annals of history, which are like halls, I think. I'm not exactly sure. Have you ever been in a hall in some kind of institution? There's pictures up there of people that been in charge of it before. Like country clubs do that too. Here's the past presidents or a reform temple. So here's all the past presidents and everything. And then also in that temple, you might have a big yard site wall with all the names of the dead and little light bulbs. And I don't know if there's anything like that at FMU. I'm up for doing that. There's not how many dead FMU DJs are there? Quite a few, I think, now. It's starting to rack up. And I think it'd be nice to have like a wall, like a yard site wall like that, with their name on a plaque, and you get a little light bulb, and you turn the light bulbs on, and you just screw them in, kind of unscrew them, turn them off, screw them, turn them in. And then when it's the death date of that DJ, you screw it in, lights up, everybody knows, oh, that person loved ska or something like that. And they say, we're going to play lots of ska today because DJ Two Tone died. And if we wouldn't know that if it wasn't for the art site wall and the little light bulbs. They have to be uniform. You can't, one of them burns out, you can't go, oh, I'm just going to get one of those appliance bulbs or something that's a different size or wattage. Or a Christmas light or something so that one of them is red or green or something. No. I mean, you can. There's nothing. It's not sacrilegious. That's the thing in your worship when you're recognizing something, when you're doing rituals for yourself as a way of reminding your heart of things. How do we remind our hearts of something? You know, they tell you when you want to remind yourself of something, you might tie a string around your finger until it cuts off the circulation. Finger falls off, and you go, oh, my laundry. I got to pick up my laundry. Or a ring, like a wedding ring, the kind that gets caught, again, the kind that can get caught in machinery. I think there was I can't remember which astronaut, but there's an astronaut that got his wedding ring caught in the lawnmower and lost a finger that way. And it's haunted me. Because if we were taking bets, I would have said it was the rocket ride that would have done it. But no, it's just mowing your lawn. Sometimes the things that are, oh my goodness, we do not know for whom the bell tolls, but we don't also know when it's going to toll. What the bell is, who's tolling the bell, why that does anything. It's all a mystery. Oh my goodness. Now, when I started in radio, I thought I will go on, I'll give advice. Oh my goodness, I knew I wanted to comfort hearts, first of all. That's the thing, you see somebody crying, and this happens all the time. You see somebody crying in public, and you go, hey, what's wrong? And the first thing you do is dry their tears. You go, I've got some partially clean Kleenex in my pocket, and I'm going to just go ahead, just unstick them, and then we're going to wipe your tears first. First things first. Now I'm going to heal your heart by solving all your problems. Tell me what's wrong. And they go, well, I don't know you. And, well, why are you crying? Because you're touching me and you're scaring me. Oh, so I've caused the crying. Well, that's an easy one. So maybe you should shut me off if I am causing harm, because like the Hippocratic Oath says, and I know this from television shows, first, do no harm. Second, do harm. Third, undo the harm you just did. Well, why did that second do harm? That's very complicated. And like any, when you go into like Zen or anything like that, you're going to get advanced information and lessons right along with the basic stuff. You ever taken Tai Chi or Kung Fu or something? You go in and go, I'm just a beginner. Is that going to be fine? You just have the one class and they go, that's fine. I don't care if you learn anything. And you go, all right. And you go in and you do what the advanced students do. And maybe there's one, two people who are learning something and you're just like, I feel so confused. What an important feeling. Why are you confused? Because you picked the wrong kung fu school. Again, and also why? Because everybody else seems to know what they're doing. But who knows whether they're doing the right thing? They could be all know what they're doing because they're equally all self-deluded. Oh my goodness, when we free our minds, when we're able to walk into a situation and say, I'm confused, but I'm going to act like I'm a Captain Kirk. And I'm going to put my head up and I'm going to carry myself like I'm Ralph Cromdon. Like a kabuki actor. I'm not going to make the noises because I feel like I don't want to. I respect and love the kabuki culture and Japanese theater. And I don't want to be thought to be mocking. But I do go around like sort of speaking in the kabuki voice, not in Japanese. I'll just translate it into English, but I want to do the inflections and all. It's so fun and exciting to me. And I think, you know, is there something comic about it? Oh, there can be. Look at The Honeymooners. I don't find it funny. I don't either. Whatever I'm with you. Okay. So, I'm entertained by things I don't find funny or I'm interested in. Let's put it that way. So I can watch Hogan's Heroes, which I find, appalling. Not really offensive or anything, but just dreck, you know? And every episode's the same. But there's something sort of weirdly fascinating about it. You know when there's like a dumb comic strip in the newspaper, and it's just, I wouldn't say Nancy, because Nancy's sort of exquisite. But when it's just inadvertently, stylistically inspiring. And I feel like Hogan's Heroes is that way because of the tunnels because of this notion that they're not in prison at all, that the prisoners are the people that are imprisoning them, really. And it's weird. It could be, if it had more of a like a Mamet kind of thing going on. I think it needs a little few more twists and turns. But it's and they don't do treachery a lot. Like there's never a mole or anything in the among the prisoners, and that would make it really, really bad. Maybe I think that has happened. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna go to my I love going to my Hogan's Hero fan art site where people do scripts and they do LeBeau's cooking show. I love somebody's done that all animated. Hello, I'm LeBeau in the cooking show. And it's a little animated figure of LeBeau. They all have it. Oh, it's Kinchlow's Tech Corner is cool. And that's also a little animated thing, but it's a different animation style. And the kids today, they're taking those old stories, old traditional stories, and they're putting their own little twist on it, twisting it up. And I love to see that old timers like myself are on the way out. Nobody wants to say, hey, I got, what's your spec script? And say, it's All in the Family. I wanted to write television shows. Oh my goodness, I really did. And so I wrote some, they tell you to write scripts for existing shows. So this is when I was a young person. They don't hire old person. People to write things because they think we don't want to hear what old people have to say. Also, they'll be good at writing, and we don't want that. No, not quite. We want young people who think they're good at writing, and I don't know why that's easier. But so they say write some scripts for some shows. So I did, and I remember I wrote a Frasier, I thought, which I had seen a couple times, and then I wrote another one. For sure. I'm not going to say the show, but it was one I'd never seen. So I just looked up the list of characters or something, and I don't know. I know that was dumb. So I had these scripts, and I don't know, a friend was helping me out and getting them seen or something. I don't remember what happened after that. But I do remember that my idea did show up on Frasier. So that's kind of fun. I was excited about that. But I know I never got any job. Or no, next question. But that doesn't, what does that say? Why did you, when I wrote those things, I think I was being cynical. Because never at any time did I think it was funny or good. There was just, I could do this. And that is so horrifying to me. It's like, who's laughing exactly? I wonder, who are we making laugh? And I've thought that with the radio show. I say, Hardy, who are you making laugh? And I hear you out there. It's like Romper Room, except with ears. You go, nobody. Well, that's your opinion. Who knows? Some people laugh in a mean-spirited, ironic way. I know that's right. Like if I said, you know, I know that a lot of you, some of you are hate listening, and somebody goes, you're right about that. That's a laugh, and that counts. So I know that for other DJs here, you go, I don't care why you're listening, because what happens is that, I don't know if you know what a Nielsen family is. So they have the Nielsen ratings is TV, and then the Nielsens is that Harry Nielsen, one of his families, I don't know whether it was the early one he abandoned or one of them, the descendants are listening. And they say Harry himself is listening to radio. And the reason that that's possible is because the radio waves act almost the same way as human souls, and that they're sucked up into the nearest black hole. I'm glad we're all dying on the same planet so that we can go to the same black hole together. I worry about that if a friend goes into space exploration, they go, oh, I died in the Ganjanda Quadrant. So I went into Gandranada 8, which is a black hole all the way over there, and I'll never see you again for all of eternity, and that would break my heart. But as it is, I know, oh my goodness, everyone who's ever lived on the earth, good, bad, or indifferent, I'm going to see for all eternity maybe. How's that going to work out? Probably have to do it like timeshares, and that's the Earth is a great big timeshare. So that's before you were born. They say, how would you like to go to this beautiful vacation spot? And that's great, but it's only for a fixed amount of time. You don't really own it. You get it a week or 2 weeks out of the year. Oh, I just want to sell it then. Nearly impossible. You must go live your life. You can't trade it. So you go to Earth, but then you've got to leave at some point because it's you can't. Good. Okay. Well, not good. I know, right? It's such a mixed thing. If you could only do, like, I wish I could die just right before my bills come due and then come back again. Right after everyone's forgotten about me. That would be lovely. I guess you could, don't try faking your death like that. Oh, it gets to, I know a guy who faked his death so many times he went broke. Just from, like, headstones and things. Because I can't do it anymore. I'm broke. And he just kept using the same name. And people were starting to wonder. And it's like, why have you died so many times? And he goes, shut up. It's a condition. There might have been I don't know if it was a Twilight Zone or something. The guy, they go to bury the guy. He's not really dead. And then it's a sitcom after that, I think. I think that was a spinoff for Gilligan's Island. So they were going to go bury the guy. I go, oh, Gilligan's not dead. Let's go on. We have time for a tour. And then he's revived. And then the whole rest of the series they play as a big joke. There is a series like that. Can you guess the one? There is a television. There's a comedy series that the pilot for it was not a comedy. Anybody? Anybody want to guess? Can you guess? McHale's Navy. McHale's Navy did not start as a comedy. So it's a comedy version of a... And, you know, in many ways, Hogan's Heroes is like that, too. It's sort of a comedy version of... not The Great Escape, but one of them like that. And isn't that strange? You go, let's do that. But it's a comedy. And I've thought that about... Let's see, what great movies, classic movies could be... fun situation comedies. I know this is kind of an obscure one, and a lot of you might not know it, but I think Rome Open City would be a great situation comedy. Just played for laughs. First of all, it's got Nazis, who are hilarious. And in this case, these Nazis are great because they're like, we're the baddies, aren't we? And I love that. So there's lots of that. And also, there's some shows. I was just watching... I know this isn't a television review program. I'm so sorry. Normally people say, I turn in for spirituality. Here you are talking about television like everything does on the podcast and the podcast, pop poop, all over the place. Can't somebody talk about something that isn't television? Yes, in a minute. But first, I was watching the Time Bandits television, and I thought, this would be great. They're doing it all up as a comedy. But I'd love it if it was just take the comedy elements out of it. And it's just terror. It's just terrifying. And new characters every week because they all get wiped out. I don't know. Maybe that's just that's why I'm not in television. But if I were, maybe I'd be the biggest mogul there was. Can you imagine that? Can you imagine that? Turns out that my wacky upside down ideas are the good ones, and everything that's been on so far has been terrible. And everybody just likes it because of nostalgia. You think you like something because it was shown to you. It's just like whatever the view is outside the window of your crib, whatever the view is from your bassinet, is going to endear itself to you, even if it's a hellscape, and that can be used your whole life, you know. And I feel that way. Your window is a television a lot of times if you're of a certain age. And so what you did is they say, well, that glass thing looks like a window. I'm going to look at it. And you go to look at it. And then there's just some, like, corpulent, grumpy old dude with a white mustache going, they're going to drop ping pong balls on me. I have a bunny rabbit doesn't drop ping pong balls on me. That is Captain Kangaroo. And that was my impression of him. Thank you. I want to do lots more impressions of like things that babies, how babies hear the world. I don't want to do how babies hear Mr. Rogers, because you'll want to smack me. So I'll save that one. But let me try one. That's Popeye. Now, last week I did for you my impression of Archie Bunker using only three words. And I'm sort of proud of that. And I'm not sure there are three words he ever uses in a row, but he just uses them, you know, a lot. And is Jesus here, there. And I love that. That's a confusing one. And you could make it even more confusing by just making the sounds. You're just going, which is all he does, like that. And to me, that's music. That's the music of language. I'm not so concerned with meaning all the time. I guess it's because I like to listen to movies that are made in languages that I don't speak. And so when I'm watching them, I can't always be reading the subtitles because it takes my eyes away from the action. So I just listen to Japanese movies. I just listen to Italian movies. I just listen to French movies, you know, as I watch and everything. I don't concern myself sometimes, especially if I've seen it a lot. And so I just hear the sounds. And I realize that you can just understand a lot just by the tone of the voices, or whether they're loud or soft or angry or anything. I'm teaching you things that babies know, so I don't know why you're still listening. Bless your heart. This fulfills a requirement. I know you're all could be condescending about it. Say, I don't understand the Hardy White Show. Why that's on? Because if you're going to be a radio station, they require you to have an hour that's not popular or comprehensible. Now, FMU has figured, oh, we better go overboard. They've done it a lot with many and many of their shows, but you only really are supposed to have one. But we have many that are incomprehensible. And I love that. It gives you something to think about. It's like a hall of mirrors. Isn't that there's a hall of mirrors in Europe, and it's supposed to be so good. And the mirrors are made of crystal, and they're so clear, and the clear parts are clear, and the mirror parts are pristine, and you can't tell from the floor even. It's lit in this exquisite way, and it's been around for years and years, and you can tell it's good because there are people who have never come out. They're lost in there, and the first thing that hits you when you go in is the odor. Again, it's just like, whoa, wow, what's that? And I go, well, so, you know, some people don't leave. And there, if you go in deep enough, you'll see skeletons resting upon the mirrors, where they became so confused they couldn't get out. But the mistake they made is they panicked, because the way out was before them all along. Just kick through the damn mirrors. It's just glass. Nobody's going to, well, they may bill you later, but if you don't just die there, just kick the damn mirror down. That's silly. So, well, I didn't want to hurt anything. Yeah, so you just starved to death and died there in the House of Mirrors? And it's called a fun house. If you're not having fun, mission not accomplished. I believe you can get a refund. But don't be trapped in there. I know when that happens at any kind of carnivals, it's like, oh, yeah, we had some people perish on one of the rides and everything. That's not supposed to be. You say it like, oh, that's part of it. But it's not. It's supposed to be a place of joy and everything, and you bring tragedy to it. So if you're not having fun, with the exception of listening to this radio show or whatever it is, I say TV show because I know what you're picturing. But with the exception of this show, which doesn't have to be fun, does medicine taste good? No. Does medicine that doesn't do anything have to taste good? Do placebos have to taste good? No. The things that are just neutral. Does sand have to taste good? No. All right. Well, then shut up and eat your sand. That's what I'm saying. Oh, bless you. I'm not. I wouldn't tell you to shut up. Oh, that hurt my heart to say it. I don't like to be, even when I'm teasing, I don't like to be aggressive like that. It scares, we all get scared. And I'm not like that. Oh, my goodness. The last thing I want to be is a bully. I don't like them. And I was early on, didn't like them. And I still don't. And I don't want to bully anybody. And I still catch myself sometimes, you know. You don't even think you're doing it. Like I was at the grocery store and this older lady was, you know, unloading her groceries and it was taking so long. And I said, hurry up or I'll beat you up like that. And I'm thinking, wait, stop. That's bully behavior. And so I was like, I was more passive aggressive, I would think, if that happened. It didn't happen, but if it did, I would just say, can I help you, ma'am? Please, let me help you. No, I don't know what that's the right thing to do, because then everybody wins. You help her, and she goes, no, don't touch my stuff. And I said, look, I don't want to argue with you, but it isn't your stuff yet. It still belongs to the store. So conceivably, I could just grab it, put it in my cart, sister. Once you pay for it, yes, it's yours. I didn't touch it then, did I? You know, you got the, you know, your beef is with the bag boy. Because I'm watching him. He's touched every single thing you bought. I've had it with that lady. No, that I made that up. None of that happened. I have good relations usually when I go out to the in public, because I know you don't know what people have been through. Especially like if you're at the, I learned this at the hospital. In the area you go when people you know are really sick. You say, I don't know what these people are going through. I can guess someone they know is sick. So, but, and that feels like that's enough. But that could be anywhere, you know. So if that person is grouchy to you or robs you or something, think, what are they going through? Maybe they're going through. They don't want to take what they just took from me. I think that about every other package I get at the house. I think, oh, if somebody took that off my porch, joke's on them. I wonder if they didn't even know what to do with it. So, well, some things they would. I just got a nice shirt in the mail. I get a lot of used. I like to get used clothing because I think, well, the things I want, I can't afford new. And the things that I can afford new, I don't want. So I'll buy them used. Because something that you learn as you get older is that people with good taste die eventually. And if you're not super concerned with sort of trends and everything and dressing, like right on the head. And as you get older, like just nice things are better than up-to-date fashion. Then you say, hey, I can just buy this used and this is great. And maybe somebody, you know, they usually don't die in it. And unless you buy there, sometimes, you know, you'll look on like eBay or something, it'll say death pajamas. Don't get those. So a lot of things like that. Experimental astronaut suit only used once. Things like that. And as long as you're not going to use it to experiment with your astronauting, you could do that. I'm not going to comment on current events only to say that recently a CEO got in trouble and the name of his company, which I'm also not going to mention, is also a profession, which is weird, unrelated to anything. And I think unrelated to anything that the company does. But in every news story, it seemed like he was two things. You know, like singer-songwriter. And it was just the name of the company and then CEO, which he was of. So I'm not going to give you it for example because then you'll figure out what I'm talking about. And I don't really want that, I don't think. Maybe I do. I don't know. It'd be like chemist, CEO, something, something. You go, oh, he wears many hats. And if he had one of those names that was also like... like major doctor or something like that. People have names like that, right? Judge something. Judge major doctor. So he could be chemist CEO, judge major doctor. And you go, wow. That's a lot of professions. I wonder what she's best at. You know, is he a doctor that does all this other stuff? Or what's his, what's your forte, friend? That means strength. Or loud. What's your loud? Because the piano forte means, that was what the piano was originally called, the soft loud. And I guess people just, for sure, you know, it's like, could you bring your soft loud? Did you bring your soft loud? Bring your soft loud. And then they were just like, bring your soft. Did you bring your soft? I like the soft. And they dropped the loud part. Or maybe they got less loud. Who knows? But sometimes they'll just shorten things like that. But the forte part meant loud or strong. Soft, strong. That sounds like toilet paper. Soft Strong is my favorite toilet paper brand, and I use it. I don't have grievances, and I don't have gripes. But I do wonder things in the area, in my personally offended area of my brain. So that's where I am with this, and that is really graphic toilet paper ads. They're not graphic toilet paper ads, because a lot of times they'll use cartoon characters. But then they'll start saying things like, you know, other stuff sticks to your butt and comes apart in pieces on your butt when you're wiping poo or something. And I'm thinking, well, that's all too much. First of all, that we all use paper to clean, that is so awful, you know? It's they're going to be reusable brushes or something. Disposable brush. This is the worst thing. So everybody else, I think, uses like water or something. But there's just such an industry. It's like, think of how many trees a year we could just smear feces on them like that. And I think like most of the publishing industry is just smearing feces on paper too. So we waste a lot of trees, poor trees. They could be growing and doing things and say, no, we need to write, you know, really bad novels and wipe our butts. And so we need these trees, but we don't. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Brother Water could do the same for us. Now, how do you record information on water, idiot? Well, I guess you've never seen a movie made on a cruise ship that my friend Chris Roberti made. So there you go. But they might have written it down first on a script. But it could have been on just on their laptops the whole time. I don't know. No, actually on water, using water as a medium. How do you have it retain information? It does. It's called your brain. What are you saying? I'm saying not everything has to be recorded or written down, does it, or passed on. A lot of times the only reason we do it is to sell it. Let's say you got a bunch of nice stories in your head. So I'm going to write them down and make a novel. Then what are you going to do with it? Well, I'd like to get it published and have people read it for free. Oh, no, no, no. And the reason is because you really just would like to sell this great thing. It seems like something somebody would buy. And also, they won't read it for free for some reason. Everybody who's ever published anything, I'm just putting my novels out there for free. Hopefully people will read them. They won't. They won't for some reason. So, but my goodness, though, if they pay a lot of money for it, they will. So you put it out there, you sell them. But no one's making. You don't even have to record that story. I mean, well, we have so many. So well, humanity will. We've now done a little experiment. And we have had novels for 1,000. Tale of Genji or something. So thousands. It's too late. 1,000 years. Right? So 1,000 years. And things have gotten, what have they done? What have they solved? What have we learned? Well, we've learned quite a bit that has been, well, copied and made into other similar things. I think that's true. Oh, my goodness. So maybe we don't have to make a lot of, that's what I've always been, sorry, you don't make that many things. Hardy, you seem like against making. I kind of am in a way. I'm not against creating experiences, but I'm sort of against leaving any trace. And I love that if something is half remembered, that's why I think performances are great that aren't recorded, because people misremember them and they live a different life misremembered. And recordings lie anyway. They miss so much. I mean, you could have the words recorded, you could have sounds recorded, but you'll never know what all the subtle reactions were. You'll never see the expressions on people's faces, really. Not all the information can be retained. Some of it you feel and you move on. And we love to grab hold of something. If only I could take this garden, this experience that I'm having right now among these flowers in this garden, if I could just seal it in time, if I could just freeze it in amber, if I could capture it. Yes, that's the word, capture it somehow. Keep it in a cage with me so I could have this beauty with me all the time. Or I could stay a lens to beauty. And everywhere I go, I can feel this thing that I'm feeling now, so that no one moment is going to have to be that precious, because I am the camera. I am the television set. I am the radio. I am the radio. I am Hardy White. I am the radio. The things that come out of my mouth make little sense sometimes, but sometimes they do. I sound like a radio. If you were standing in the distance and part of your play or part of your movie was someone's listening to the radio in a distance, I would be the perfect person to have on because it would sound something like this. Exactly like that. It's the music of it. It's the rhythm. Oh, my goodness, I welcome you into this symphony. When I was a child, I had an older cousin, my mother's first cousin, my first cousin once removed, took me to a symphony. And it was one of those symphonies that was like the orchestra of the animals. There's one like that, you know, and they'll say, like, does it, the clarinet sounds like an ostrich, you know. The trumpet sounds like an elephant. Like that or something. And they all, the different sounds, all the instruments, you could imagine as being animals that make their different... I don't know. And what's the viola? What animal is that? Gosh, I still remember I met a professional violinist and he told like five viola jokes in a row. I don't know why the hate. I'll talk about that some other time. My goodness. If you've felt that probably if you play viola. I don't know. I'm sorry. It's like using a pick on a bass or something. People give you a lot of grief, no reason. We are engaged in an experiment right now. And that experiment is our lives. And we'll never really get to know what the results of those experiments are. That experiment is. We will be gone. We all will be. But right now, we're together. Right now, this thing that we're experiencing is the thing that you have heard told the old-timers went through when they listened to radio or they listened to their entertainment. And they passed on to you those feelings, and they say, "Boy, I wish I could tell you how I felt the first time I heard Ishkabibble or something." And you go, "Well, I don't know who that is." And they say, "Well, I'll tell. How about the first time I ever saw Harold Lloyd hanging from a building with his fake hand or something?" Say, "Well, I don't know. You know what you're talking about," but they convey the feeling to you. Say, "The old timer was telling me that, and he seemed real happy, and then he started to wet himself. So I think he was really enjoying thinking back and being nostalgic." And a lot of people, that's what they're nostalgic for. I go, "Well, I wish I could just let it rip in my pants the way I did on a Saturday morning when I was 3 or something." No, was I potty trained? No, you're supposed to be. When do you wear diapers to? Well, I don't even remember. I think that's old to be. I think at 3, you're working at a telegraph office or something. I know my grandfather was. working in the. Do you ever see pictures of kids like a coal mine, or they got little like newsboy caps on in New York City, and they I got a job, and they're like 3 or 4 or something. I got cigarettes or hell on my this cough, and you know, I guess it's just, and they still live to be like 109 or something, and that's why. That's because they didn't have all those sugary cereals. No, I don't really know. There's something about, there's still sugary cereals, but not the way they used to be. And the generation that received them, there needs to be some research done. Because I think, I mean, I'm looking back and I'm just thinking in my own life that probably King Vitamin did a lot of damage. And you say, I don't know King Vitamin. He's before my time. I go, oh, bless you. I'm glad. There's nothing more cynical. There's nothing more irresponsible than naming the cereal with the highest sugar content in the history of mankind. King Vitamin. Vitamin what? Vitamin sucrose. It's really, really, really strange. And king. Oh, there's vitamins, but who, come on kids, who's the king of all vitamins?
Sugar, sugar.
And I don't have anything against sugar. I've eaten all I can, I think, at this point. And now sugar is not my friend like it was when I was a child. Now it's like, oh, God, boy, I wish I hadn't had that. I'm loving this headache. Wish I hadn't eaten all that sugar, but boy, I can go through a bag of circus peanuts and a big thing. I had a big ALA-8 one. No, that's disgusting. But I do. Sometimes I'll have sugar. Somebody set me up with Coca-Cola the other day. Now, I don't usually drink Coca-Cola, but it was really a nice ice cold Coca-Cola. And I enjoyed it. And then my teeth felt funny. And then I felt sick. But there was a moment in there that I was like, this is great and refreshing. But it's refreshing in the same way as like a cookie is, which is not really, I don't think. When I want something refreshing, I go for either water or water with some chemical in it or something like that. And that's refreshing. Do you know, a lot of those drinks, those thirst quencher drinks, they're not made out of pee, but it's the same recipe. Did you know that? And you look right on the label. It'll go like, you know, water, uric acid, blood cells, salt, all the things that's in wee. And then they'll add like Tang or Blue or something like that to make it. And you go, oh, gulp, 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 gulp. But I know, I'm from Florida, so I know they gave it to football players first. Now, I played some football in Florida when I was a young man. I was a little more sturdy then. They say, Hardy White, we want you to be on our football team. And I said, Coach, I will go out there and do that. And I went out there, and I was on that football. I was a football player. I was really, really terrible, and they asked me to quit, which they never do. But they say, they said, this is not football school, is what I think said something like that. And they go, we expect you to sort of know the game. I go, I want to know it, but not enough to learn it or practice or anything. And so they asked me to leave. But something I learned while I was doing this was quench gum. There's a gum that is so sour, because they put something in it, and then alum gum, and then that's supposed to quench you, but the drink that you're being provided is saliva. It's like, what if there was a gum, and it could instantly make like a beverage in your mouth? What's the beverage? Spit. No, that's not it. Oh my goodness, it's been so great to be with you. Oh, and go a little long. Look at that. You are listening to Miracle Nutrition, WFMU East Orange, WMFU Mount Hope, 91.9 in Rockland County, and online, WFMU.org worldwide. Oh, my goodness. Thank you for joining me, and I'll see you.
I'm